Science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
All right. First, talking about potentially the deadliest scientist ever, who went by the name of Trofim Lysenko.
Indeed. And there I was going to ask the listening audience, you know, who they would think would be the,
sorry,
the scientist who had killed the most people, very probably. Now, this one is probably up open for debate, but I think, you know, if you ask that question, people would probably say whoever invented the nuclear bomb, the atomic bomb, et cetera, et cetera. They would be sort of top of the list. But probably a fellow by the name of Trofim Lysenko. Now, why are we talking about him today? Because I'm a big one for anniversaries.
Yep, you definitely know, noticed that.
Yes, so, you know, this is the 100th year of Debussy's death, you know, Claude Debussy.
That's a 100 years.
100 years, yes. Oh. And I happen to be...
Time flies.
I happen to be lucky enough... music.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to be in Paris on his 150th birthday. So I decided,
was it fun?
So I trotted along to the cemetery on his 150th birthday, and they weren't doing anything. Not a bloody thing for it. So I was there by myself.
We got a lot of
Debussy's grave. It was very, very moving.
A lot of people to celebrate.
Yeah,
you're in France. We stopped to celebrate every single
A lot of graves in France.
Never get out of there.
We're digressing slightly.
Yes.
So he died yesterday, 42 years ago. So that's kind of why we're talking about it.
Okay.
So a guy by the name of Lysenko, and he was a biologist, or a pseudo-biologist, I guess. And he grew up very poor, very illiterate and everything. And then the Russian Revolution came along. And, wow, that was impressive.
Yeah, sorry about that.
The Russian Revolution came along, and he sort of fancied himself as a bit of a scientist, so he started doing these experiments trying to grow peas in sort of winter weather.
Okay.
And thanks to probably some faked results and stuff, he sort of caught the attention of the powers that be and the communist leadership. And in his early 30s, and in the early 30s, he was sort of made head of Soviet agriculture.
Yeah.
And... so the Soviets were all about sort of collectivization and stuff like that, and all this five-year plan and everything, so they're going to collectivize all the farms, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that kind of didn't work, and so Stalin wanted, I guess, you know, he wanted truckloads of wheat and stuff like that. He was busy sort of exporting wheat to the States while they were having a big famine, and, you know, all these people in Ukraine died, et cetera, et cetera. And so he wanted some way of getting better yields, you know, being able to plant two crops a year rather than one, getting them to grow in the winter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this fellow Lysenko came along and said, yeah, I can do that. And so what he did was basically to ignore the laws of genetics. That was his first thing.
Okay.
So genetics is what gives us our particular features, you know, why we get blue eyes or brown eyes, and why we're right hand, left hand, all that sort of stuff. And it all goes on genes, you know, and so you have dominant genes, you have recessive genes, and then it all becomes essentially a bit of a lottery, you know, when you reproduce, you get some of these genes here, some of these genes there, blah, 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 blah.
So you want consistency.
Yeah,
if you want a better yield in agriculture, that's what we're trying to achieve. Well, it's more consistently.
Well, what he wanted, or what he thought he could do, was to just go against the whole laws of genetics and say, right, what I'm going to do, I'm going to get these wheat seed, and or this wheat seed, and I'm going to soak it in ice-cold water. And then by doing that, it's going to grow in ice-cold conditions.
Okay. Yeah. It's kind of, yeah.
Kind of a bit of a dick, really.
Well,
you
it's
know,
just cutting it through steps on the process.
Yeah, well, so that was his big thing anyway. He reckoned that it was this sort of Marxist thing about being able to make people conform to, you know, the leader's will or whatever.
Mm.
Same thing with agriculture. You know, the seeds will conform to our will, blah, 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 if we will it. And so he said, right, so he got put in charge of the agricultural system, and he said, okay, everybody out there, you can plant your seeds really, really close together because the seeds of the same class don't interfere with each other. Some weird shit like that.
Okay, so he was very unaware of how agriculture works, pretty much.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's thought that sort of genetics was a, you know, capitalist plot and all of that sort of stuff, all of that utter nonsense. Mm. And so he said, right, do that. Don't use pesticides or anything like that. Don't use fertilizers. You know, we can just get these things growing. We're going to grow orange trees in Siberia. That was his big thing, you know. And as you know, the USSR had a truckload of land, but a lot of it was sort of under snow and stuff for sort of three quarters of the year.
Well, yeah, that's pretty inconvenient.
Which is kind of a problem. And so sort of Stalin seized on this and thought, yeah, shit, this is a great idea. And
I want oranges in winter,
who
please.
Wouldn't? And then what happened, of course, was the inevitable famine. And roughly, it's estimated around about 7 million died as a result of these famines that were induced by these crazy, crazy, crazy ideas of this total, he was just an appalling person, basically. He was just trying to deny science. You know, he was basically a science denier. And gosh, there's some kind of lessons for us today in all of that.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is that he managed to outlive Stalin.
I was going to say, surely wouldn't he have been, you know, once you obviously see that the result is in there, you'd think that he'd just been, you know,
he would have been
nicely pushed away.
Bullet in the back of the head, usually. Yes, that's what they did.
I know that they're not being kindly pushed away. But
and yeah, you'd be right. You'd sort of think that, but so he must have been a real, real, real toady to Stalin, you know. And the even worse thing was that the Chinese got in on the act in the 50s and thought, yeah, this is great stuff, this Lysenkoism, you know, genetics is all crap and blah, blah, blah. And about 30 million died as a result of the famines in China. Pretty much directly as a result of these, of this guy's ideas. And in Russia, they increased the arable land by about 163-fold during his tenure, and the crop yield went down. The actual total yield went down, despite increasing the area by 160-fold. It's just terrible. So,
so lesson for us: just learn about science.
Science is kind of important.
Yeah.
It kind of
just
is.
Just a little bit sometimes.
And no matter how much you wish that you can control it, you can't. You know, these are the laws of nature. It sounds like a cliche, you know, the laws of nature. But genetics is a law of nature. You can't get around that, okay?
Not everything is malleable.
Absolutely. And you know, this was sort of likened to taking a cat and cutting its tail off and then expecting its offspring to be born without tails.
Oh, yes.
So that was kind of the analogy that was used, and it's a fine analogy.
No, isn't it that if you cut all of the cat's tails, that's not going to change anything? Because
the gene for tailless cats isn't there, so it's not going to work. And this is an absolute tragedy, but he did outlive Stalin. God knows how. He made it into the 1960s before he sort of got relieved of his post, and he died, you know, as an old man, not with a bullet in the back of the head, which absolutely astonishes me. And apparently, horribly, he's starting to be sort of lionized in Russia again.
Oh, that's
really,
that's quite problematic.
That's not good.
Why?
It's just this whole anti-science thing.
Oh, okay.
You know, we're living in an age where science is being questioned, but being questioned in ridiculous ways. And we need to stop
danger.
That. Yeah, danger, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, speaking of danger, in 536 CE, it wasn't exactly the best time to be alive.
No.
And why is that?
Well, indeed, and they have voted this now. At a conference at Harvard last week, this was voted as being the worst year to be alive in the last sort of couple of thousand years. The year 536 wasn't a good one.
All right, what was specifically bad this year?
Well, this is really interesting. This always fascinated me, actually, and what these scientists have done is they've got an ice core out of a glacier in Switzerland. And it's a 72-meter long ice core. And what they've done is basically divide it up into 50,000 slices per meter, which is quite a lot of slices per meter.
Yep.
And they can analyze each of those slices and find out what elements are present in each of those slices. Okay?
Okay.
These infinitesimally thin slices.
Yeah.
And from that, they can figure out what was going on in the world at the time, down to about the month that it happened. They can get snowfall down to about a month.
Okay, so we're talking weather, right?
Yes, we're talking weather. So the glaciers are made up of snow,
yep.
Okay, and that gets compacted, turns into ice, etc., etc. And whatever the snow carries with it ends up in the ice core.
How do they get the slices?
That's
what I want to know. And how does it not melt?
They've got
freezing conditions.
Yep. So they're doing everything in freezing conditions, so it's not melting. And as I say, they can analyze this to remarkable precision. And they say in the year 536, there was a whole lot of sulfur and bismuth found in these layers. And sulfur and bismuth are hallmarks of volcanic eruptions.
Okay.
Okay. So when a volcano erupts, it ejects a shitload of stuff all into the atmosphere. And then that gets precipitated back to Earth as either rain or snow or whatever. Mm-hmm. And in the Alps, it's going to be snow. And So they have said that in 536 there was a big volcanic eruption, like a big volcanic eruption. Now, remaining records from that time said that the sun continued shining for sort of a year and a half, but there was no warmth in it. And from their data, they can figure out that the average temperature of the Earth went down between 1.5 and 2.5 degrees. There was obviously massive crop failures all over the place. There was snow in China in the summer, and all of this stuff. And the following 10 years was the coldest 10 years in the last 2,500 years, the next decade. And there were also big volcanic eruptions. There were two other big volcanic eruptions about 3 or 4 years after that as well.
Wow.
And so that was just not a good time to be alive, because basically all of the stuff in the atmosphere was blocking the sun's rays. And, you know, you weren't getting any heat and things were getting cold. And even that small amount of cool, well, seemingly small amount of cooling made an enormous difference to the whole planet. So
it's pretty impressive.
And the, you know, what they can tell from these ice cores is just quite remarkable.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Impressive that you can learn so much
down
to the month.
From something like that you seem, that's seemingly so simple.
Yes.
Out of such a thin layer as well.
Yeah. Mm. And what they also do is they can get tree ring data as well.
Yeah.
Okay, going back if they've got old enough trees. And again, they can correlate the tree ring data with this data as well, and they sort of match up.
Right.
So that, you know, there's times of slow growth in the trees, and again, that's going to conform to you know, the times when the sun wasn't very hot, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Are the trees that old?
Yes, there are.
That's a stupid question.
The oldest tree.
I was wondering exactly the same thing.
No, the oldest tree is around about 4,000 years old. There's a tree in the States that's about 4,000 years old. So I think some of the coyote trees, I think, can get up to like 1,000 or something like that. So I think Tane Mahuta might be about 800 years old, I think.
Yeah, that's
but it might be a bit impressive. Difficult to tell her age until you cut them down, which you don't want to do.
let's assume.
But it wasn't a good year. And then just to cap that off, 2 years later, they had the plague that came along, and that killed about half of the Mediterranean population. The plague. So
great decade to be remembered.
They did used to call it the Dark Ages, but you know,
literally,
probably a reason for that.
Call it the shit ages now. Something.
All right, there's no complaint about today then.
But you know, as you say, this is science at its very, very best. The fact that they can analyze this data to such precision is quite.
Well, yeah, we're talking 1,500 years ago.
Yes. Down to a week.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, a month. Sorry. Mm. You know.
Not that precise.
Not that. No, they'll be working on that though. So.
All right, let's wrap it up with again a very cute story. I just love wombats. They just look very, very cute, and they also happen to do very cute poops.
Well,
can you say poops plural, or is it just poop?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Poops.
I'd go singular or plural on that. I'd say poos. Yes. Yes.
Anyway, they're little square ones.
We're getting scatological on these. Yes. Here we go. Now, this is something I would have to say that I didn't know. There are many things I don't. God, there's so many things I don't know. But this I didn't know is that wombats do cubic poops. And why would they do cubic poops, you might ask?
Yeah.
Well, that is a question.
How is my first question, really?
Well, we're getting to how, but why? And again, this is purely speculative, surely, but the researchers think that they do cubic poops because they mark their territory with their poos. Mm-hmm. And if they are on rocks and stuff like that and they do a cubic poop, then it doesn't roll off.
Mm.
Yeah. Wow.
That's such an odd thing
to have evolved.
That may or may not be, you know, the reason why.
Yeah.
But, it sounds plausible.
Yeah.
How do they come to that potential conclusion?
Oh, that's a good question. I think that, as I say, pure speculation probably would be my guess.
Do they just observe wombats?
Yeah.
And they're like, that looks like that they're marking their territory there. Better not roll down.
So somebody thought, right, let's study this and let's see if we can figure out why or, well, not why, but how they do cubic poops.
Are they the only animal to do cubic poops?
I would have to plead the fifth. I really don't know.
I think that's why the article
I think they might be the only ones in the world that do that. So this came out at a meeting of, and you're going to love this, the American Physical Society of Fluid Dynamics.
Right. Great.
And there are a couple of researchers at Georgia Tech, of all places, not in Australia, But they had some mates in Australia who had some wombat roadkill, a couple of dead wombats. So they froze them, sent them over to Georgia Tech. And then they... I know, I'm sorry.
So they weren't intentionally killed.
No.
That's great.
No. I don't think you're allowed to intentionally kill a wombat somehow. I think they're probably...
No, yeah. But there's so many animals who are harmed in testing. But
yeah,
nice to know that that was roadkill.
I know. So this was indeed roadkill. And so what they did was they had a look at their intestines. And how long are the intestines in a wombat?
Very long, I suppose.
30 metres.
How do you even fit that in there?
I don't know. I mean, I'd hate to think what ours are if the wombats is 30
yeah,
metres.
Ours
I,
are
I
long.
Don't know. But yeah, yeah. Because you need longer all of that, you know, that surface area to absorb stuff and et cetera and blah, 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 blah. But what they found was that wombat intestines are kind of stretchier than sort of human ones.
Okay.
But they've also got these sort of stiff parts. And in the last metre of the intestine, they've got these really sort of stiff parts that they propose shape the poo into these cubic bits. So that's apparently it. And so everything sort of, you know, it hits this sort of stiff part and it all sort of backs up and everything. And you can sort of figure out the rest, I'm sure.
Yes, please don't make more gestures of how poop comes out.
But apparently they also poop very dry and so it holds its shape. As well,
hence
so,
probably there's a reason for that.
Yes, indeed. So look, there's evolution. You know, it's amazing stuff. The
evolution blows my mind. The things that evolve, the tiny like minute details. It's just bizarre.
Yeah, no, absolutely crazy. Incredible, absolutely astonishing. And we've just got so much to learn about the earth and nature and everything. So people who are listening, get out there and study science and answer these questions because
it's really cool.
It's worth it. Yeah.
Well, thanks for talking to us. Just before I let you go, someone just sent a text saying Tane Mahuta is 2,500 years old.
Really?
So you're quite far off the mark.
Holy moly. Yeah. Wow. Sheesh. Okay.
That'd be interesting to study once it naturally comes down.
Oh, gosh. Well, that's incredible. Obviously. Okay, I'm mind officially blown. There we go.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for talking to us today. We'll see you next time.
No, I think Marcus is on next week.
Okay.
I believe. So.
Sometime later.
Indeed.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
See
you.
Bye.
See
ya.
That was Dear Science.